wicked breed. Books, books.
It's always a highlight of the week to sit down with one of our independent booksellers in our region to discuss some great reads that they want to share with Roundtable listeners. So it is a thrill to welcome back Lily Bartels, book buyer for the Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, New York. Lily, good morning. Welcome to the program. Good to have you back.
Hey, Joe. It's good to be back. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much. Always great to hear your voice. So where do we begin? What's going on?
I want to start with a book called Come Fly the World, The Jet Age Story of the Women of Pan Am by Julia Cook, who parenthetically is a daughter of a former Pan Am exec. And she's written this engrossing, lively, very informative account of Pan American Airways in its heyday, which was roughly mid-60s to mid-70s. And then she interweaves the history of the company with these revealing and very engaging personal stories of several longtime flight attendants whose lives intersected through their work. So at the time, I'm sure you recall, options for women in the workforce were really pretty severely limited. You could be a teacher, a nurse, a secretary, a librarian, all very worthwhile and worthy occupations. But if you were a woman that wanted some sort of adventure and to see the world, you wanted to be a stewardess. And I came across this very startling fact that these positions in the 1960s were so coveted that in 1 year alone, more than 244,000 women applied for 12,000 positions in the industry. Now, they had to have a college degree, they had to speak two languages, but they were also up against these very stringent standards of height and weight, age limits, obviously racism, they couldn't be married, and of course the pervasive sexism of the times meant that they were locked out of any upward movement into management positions. And Cook also discusses the close relationship that Pan Am had with the U.S. government at the time, specifically during the Vietnam War when the airline transported military personnel to and from Vietnam and to and from their R&R breaks. And then at the end of the war, when they flew babies out of the country in what was called Operation Baby Lift. I found this a very entertaining and a fascinating look into this era and into, you know, the integral role that stewardesses played in it, which is somewhat overlooked. It's a great read.
It really is. Come Fly the World, The Jet Age Story of the Women of Pan Am. Julia Cook is the author. Okay, next up.
So Chris Whitaker's novel, We Begin at the End, is a superb thriller, but to assign it to just that category would really limit what it is. So yes, there's a murder mystery at the core of the story that structures the book, but it's also a love story, actually several love stories of different natures. It's a tragedy, and it has some of the most extraordinarily well-developed characters that I've encountered in a long time that really come alive on the page and propel this story forward, particularly this unforgettable 13-year-old girl named Duchess Day Radley, or as she likes to refer to herself, the outlaw Duchess Day Radley. So the story is set in this California coastal town where 30 years ago, a 15-year-old boy named Vincent committed a fatal hit and run that killed a little girl, and he is now being released from prison. And the town's police chief, a man named Walk, who has been a lifelong friend of Vincent's even during his incarceration, he's hoping that Vincent's return will lead to healing in the town of some of the repercussions that still linger from that tragic event. But soon after Vincent comes home, a murder occurs for which he becomes the chief suspect. And the victim is the mother of Duchess and Duchess's little brother, Robin, of whom she is fiercely protective. And that is one of the most moving and wonderful parts of this book. But both Duchess and Walk each decide to pursue their own respective quests to solve this murder. So this is a riveting tale. It's dark. It's moving. It's very emotion charged. But in the end, it's really Duchess's grit and her strength and her determination and her vulnerability that creates this sort of light that illuminates the story. And it often breaks your heart. And the story's ending is bittersweet, but in a way, it is just the right ending, and it carries the blessing of hope. A wonderful read.
We Begin at the End by Chris Whitaker. All right, next up.
Next up, I have some nonfiction, The Last Kings of Shanghai by Jonathan Kaufman. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. And this is an absolutely fascinating but little-known history I'd never heard of two extraordinary rival Jewish dynasties that flourished in, of all places, Shanghai and Hong Kong as China moved into the modern era. And these families were the Sassoons and the Kadouris, both originally from Baghdad, where their families had lived for centuries before having to flee due to political changes. So they settled in India and then in England and then in China, and they created these enormous business empires, and they were just very deeply involved and influential in Chinese business and politics for an astounding 175 years. They helped transform China into a global economic powerhouse, but they also lost nearly everything as the communists took power. So the other part of this book that I found the most riveting is that the author, Jonathan Kaufman, delves into this remarkable story of how during the height of World War II, these two families banded together to save 18,000 Jews from the Holocaust. And then later, an even more astounding 30,000 Chinese from the communists. This is a brisk read that reveals an amazing part of history that's mostly gone unreported. I strongly recommend it.
The name of the book is The Last Kings of Shanghai by Jonathan Kaufman. All right. Next up is a book I just sent to my niece for her to read because I heard good things about it. The Lost Apothecary. What say you,
yes,
Lily Bartels?
Yes, by Sarah Penner. And this is a story told from multiple perspectives over a span of many years in which the author weaves together the stories of three women that are actually separated by more than two centuries, but connected through pain and fear and hope and mutual experiences. So it starts in London in 1791, where Nella works in an apothecary, and here she concocts,
oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Poisons to give to women who come to her to solve the problem of dangerous men in their lives. And she meets this 12-year-old girl named Eliza, who comes to her as a client, but then becomes her friend. And in the present timeline, you have a woman named Caroline, who is taking a trip alone to London after her husband has been unfaithful in their marriage. And once she's there, she meanders around the city, and she makes this chance discovery of a small blue apothecary bottle. And that sort of stirs to life in her this passion for history that she's always had, but has remained relatively subdued. And she's looking for a new purpose to her life. And we know that she may find it in this story that she'll discover about Nella and Eliza. So Penner weaves together these double timelines really seamlessly. And even when the women are sometimes telling of the same events, their voices and their presences are so distinct and unique that we never lose sight of their characters. And that gives this narrative it's kind of spellbinding, really, for the reader. And the reader's aware of the emotional link that binds these characters together, even when that link is not obvious to the women themselves. And I also want to point out that this made me feel that it's a story about the strength of women across centuries and how women have helped other women in a world that's pretty much always been stacked against them. It's a lot of fascinating historical detail. It's fast-paced. It's really atmospheric and suspenseful. And not to be too cliched about it, it will keep you guessing until the last paragraph. Loved it.
Excellent. The Lost Apothecary by Sarah Penner. Okay, next up.
is an international bestseller that's just being released here called The Phone Booth at the Edge of the World by Laura Imai Messina. And it's fiction that has a true event as its taking off point, which is an earthquake off the coast of Japan in 2011 that unleashed an enormous tsunami that killed many thousands of people. And the novel focuses on a woman named Yui, who lost both her mother and her three-year-old daughter in this catastrophe, and of course is overwhelmed by grief. And even though her life goes on and she works, she's just paralyzed by her loss. And she hears about a phone booth, an abandoned phone booth where grieving survivors can use the disconnected phone, which is called a wind phone, to send messages across the wind to their lost loved ones. And this is actually inspired by a real phone booth in Japan that's used for that purpose. So Yui sets out to make a pilgrimage to the phone booth, but once she arrives, she finds she can't bring herself to speak. But she does, however, meet a young, bereaved husband named Takeshi, and his young daughter who hasn't spoken since her mother died. You know, this is a beautifully written book that then takes us through the beginning of what will be Yui and Takeshi's 30 years together. And it also makes the larger point of how healing can happen even after terrible loss and grief. And in a way, the book is a small, quiet love story between two people. Yeah. But at the same time, the author also makes it this vast, expansive meditation on grieving and on loss, but also about survival and hope and continuation. Really, it's a must read. It's beautiful.
Again, the name of the book is The Phone Booth at the Edge of the World. Okay, next.
Then I have The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. This has been a New York Times bestseller for a few months now, and deservedly so. I've loved a lot of what Matt Haig has written, and this has not disappointed, because it's a story based on such an intriguing premise and one that speaks to questions I think we've all pondered about how we might have lived a life different from the one we actually have. And just reading a little bit of the cover blurb, between life and death, there is a library. And within that library, an infinite number of books that each provides a chance to try another life you could have lived if you had made a different choice at any point in the life you have lived. Would you have done anything different if you had the chance to undo your regrets? And would any of these lives actually have been better than the one you've had? So our main character, Nora, has had it with her current life, and she decides to exit it. But then she finds herself in this midnight library, and she thinks she has a chance to make things right and that she can now undo every decision she regrets as she tries to create her perfect life. Well, not surprisingly, things aren't always what she imagined they'd be as we follow her through these alternate lives. And before her time at the library runs out, she has to answer this ultimate question for herself. What is the best way to live?
Yeah.
And Matt Haig is such a great, inventive storyteller. And this one is so clever and wise and thought-provoking. And after you follow Nora through this journey through multiple lifetimes and their potential outcomes, the story comes to a very satisfying ending.
It is The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. And let's see, we have about 2 minutes.
So I'm going to just quickly blurb this wonderful, small, new, brand new today, commemorative edition of the poem that the young poet Amanda Gorman read at Biden's inauguration called The Hill We Climb. I'm sure you remember it.
Absolutely.
It was really a highlight of that inauguration, an inaugural poem for the country. It's just a poem that will now, you know, enter into history as having been part of that inauguration, and deservedly so. It's a beautiful poem that doesn't look away from all of the challenges that we face, particularly what we faced in the last several years, but looks ahead with such hope and such belief in our power to change things. And I'll just read the very last stanza. When the day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it, for there is always light. If only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
Beautiful.
So just an extraordinary reflection of where we are now. And honestly, Amanda Gorman, she's just really the poet of the moment. And it's a great way to start off April, which is, of course, National Poetry Month.
Wonderful things coming throughout April as a result of National Poetry Month, this being one of them, Amanda Gorman's inaugural poem, which is in a special commemorative edition that's out today, The Hill We Climb by Amanda Gorman. For more information on the Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, you can go to opendoor-bookstore.com to find out more information. Lily Bartels, always great to hear from you. Thank you very much for being with us, and best of luck, and I hope you have an enjoyable spring.
Same to you, Joe. Always a pleasure to be here. Take care.
Thank you very much. Again, you can find out more by going to opendoor-bookstore.com. You can also see Lily's entire list on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. You can see this week's list and all the lists from past weeks, wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.